The aim of our Living with Diabetes podcasts is to share information and inspire, and we endeavour to ensure that the information provided in them is accurate. It's not a substitute for medical or health advice from a healthcare professional who's aware of the facts and circumstances of your individual situation. We always recommend that advice be sought from your GP or diabetes nurse before making any changes to medication or before using any products or services referenced by DRWF. DRWF will not be held liable or responsible for failure to seek competent medical or health advice from a professional who's familiar with your situation. Views, information, or opinions contained in podcasts do not necessarily represent opinions, standards, or policies of DRWF. The inclusion of details about products or services does not indicate DRWF endorsement of them.
Hello and welcome to a special podcast in our series, Living with Diabetes, brought to you by Diabetes Research and Wellness Foundation. I'm Claire Levy, and in this edition we're looking at the work of DRWF as we approach our 25th anniversary. It coincides with the launch of a new film featuring our heroes and their personal stories of living with diabetes. In this programme, we'll focus on DRWF-funded research, which has made a significant impact on the success and availability of islet cell transplants, and why it's so important to keep attracting donations to ensure that this vital work continues to develop. To start with, I spoke to DRWF's Chief Executive, Sarah Tutton, who emphasised that our support for research has a clear objective.
Our ultimate goal is to find a cure for diabetes, and that's a highly ambitious goal. But we're intent on maximising the potential by funding the best clinical and scientific research at the best institutions in the UK and around the world. So we have a research strategy which clearly sets out the types of funding that we will award and consider appropriate around diabetes and related health. And each year we put out a call for applications for clinical and scientific fellowships, so clinical, non-clinical fellowships, and one-year pump priming awards. The pump priming awards are proof of concept awards, which allow researchers to collect translational pilot study data to prove a theory, and which then go on to leverage higher value funding over a longer term from much bigger organisations than DRWF. So they're great value awards for researchers to establish bigger programmes, essentially. Our work is focused on supporting the best and brightest researchers, doing the work that we believe is going to bring tangible benefits to people with diabetes in the shortest time frame.
I suppose, just in addition to that, I suppose people are always looking for, you know, how close are you to a cure, I suppose. And the research funding is often on quite small areas like a hormone, which in the long run may lead to better treatment. Is that right?
Yeah, potentially. I mean, so whilst we're putting out calls for applications for research in diabetes and related health, we're responsive to the different types of project that will come to DRWF for funding. So it could be that we're funding a national study that looks at misdiagnosis of diabetes in other communities. You know, and that's got a massive impact. If a study like that can generate enough data to establish that there are high levels of misdiagnosis and therefore potentially mistreatment of diabetes, then that's got a massive impact on our diabetes society at large. So actually some quite high impact can come from some relatively small sums of money, although £20,000 for a one-year pump priming project is not necessarily small. It just goes to show that this sort of seed corn funding can have a massive impact in terms of benefit for people with diabetes at a later date.
What is the Research Advisory Board, the RAB, and what happens there?
Okay, so we're members of the Association of Medical Research Charity, and we have a research advisory board that is a panel of clinicians and scientists working across all areas of diabetes and related health. And that panel of experts assess all of our applications for funding. They go through a whole peer review process to ensure that recommendations for funding are in line with our research strategy and that we are funding and spending our money on the best possible pieces of research that we believe will generate some tangible results and ultimately some practical clinical benefit for people with diabetes in the shortest time frame. So that panel of experts is actually responsible for ensuring that the applications meet our parameters for eligibility and to ensure that they fit with our research strategy and that we're spending our money wisely on the best possible research to generate the best possible outcomes.
Can you tell us more about the funding for the islet isolation facility, how the recipients qualify for a transplant and what that process then is?
Our funding of the islet isolation facility at the Churchill Hospital in Oxford is a long-standing commitment. The Nuffield Department of Surgery put a proposal to us back in 2004 to provide funds for an islet isolation facility, a centre of excellence ultimately that would be pivotal to the national UK islet transplant programme. And whilst that proposal came to us in the very early days of DRWF, we were a very, very small charity at that time, only a small handful of staff. We accepted that huge responsibility to raise those funds because we felt that this was an important piece of work. It was a vital piece of work, ultimately, to ensure that islet cell transplantation could move forward in the UK. So we provided a £1.4 million grant in 2004. The facility was launched at the Churchill Hospital in Oxford in 2006. And ultimately, the fruit of our labours paid off in 2008 when the NHS provided funding for the clinical element of an islet transplant, which was amazing. That really took the research that was done in the laboratories to the bedside in providing a national treatment program for a very small selection of people with type 1 diabetes. And our commitment to islet cell research and transplant didn't just stop with that financial commitment to build the islet isolation facility. We've subsequently gone on to continue to fund a minimum of 30% of the research team within the islet isolation facility to ensure that the best possible expertise, world-class expertise, in fact, is available to support the research work that is done in the islet facility and also to ensure that there is provision for the national treatment, islet treatment programme.
What is the national programme then? How does that work?
The UK has an islet transplant programme with multiple centres across the UK that are involved in providing islet transplants with provision of islets for those transplants from the Oxford Islet Isolation Facility.
Do they all get harvested in different parts, though? They're not all from Oxford, aren't they?
There are two centres that are isolating islets in England, and that is the Oxford Centre and the Royal Free. To qualify for a transplant, you have to have hypoglycemia unawareness. So some people with type 1 diabetes will have no hypoawareness symptoms, so they don't know when their blood sugar levels are going really low. The criteria for an islet transplant is really strict for a number of reasons, a number of limitations and risks. And the real ambition of an islet transplant is to restore those hypo symptoms so that people have improved quality of life. Transplants are limited for a number of reasons, largely because they do rely on the availability of a donor pancreas, but also because there are other challenges such as immunosuppressive treatment, which a transplant recipient will take for life. There are some risks associated with immunosuppression treatment, and all of those risks have to be balanced really by the clinicians that are assessing a potential transplant recipient to ensure that the transplant is the best option for that person to improve their diabetes management and stability and ultimately improve their quality of life.
Is there any research that you know that is trying to create islets in the lab rather than having to do it from a donor pancreas?
We've been funding some research into MSCs, mesenchymal stem cells. We've been funding some of that work through our fellowship program in the UK. And we've also worked collaboratively with some of our partner DRWF groups in the US and Sweden and Finland, which means that we can contribute higher sums of funding to larger projects as a collective. So we funded some work on MSCs also in the Diabetes Research Institute in Miami in the US. And that essentially is work that is looking at an alternative solution to islet resolution.
Professor Paul Johnson is the director of the DRWF Human Islet Isolation Facility and the Oxford Islet Transplant Programme. He's also Professor of Paediatric Surgery at the University of Oxford. He told us that the DRWF facility has paved the way for their breakthrough in developing an effective transplant programme. He's been interviewed for Our Heroes film and describes the process.
Yeah, so an islet transplant replaces those insulin-producing clusters of cells called islets of Langerhans that have been destroyed with type 1 diabetes. And we do that by taking a pancreas that's been donated by an organ donor. And you can either then do a whole pancreas transplant where you take that pancreas, you then transplant it through a fairly major operation, just like you would a kidney or a lung or a heart. Or you can actually take that pancreas and extract the balls of cells, those islets of Langerhans, and then just put the islets of Langerhans back in, a so-called islet transplant. This is a minimally invasive procedure. You're just replacing the cells that have been destroyed, and it's done under local anaesthetic rather than a big operation. You don't open the tummy or the abdomen. You actually inject these cells into the liver, where they then set up a blood supply and start to work.
There is a relatively small cohort of people with type 1 diabetes for whom the usual methods of stabilizing blood glucose levels just doesn't work for whatever reason. And so an islet transplant is a possible treatment to improve their quality of life, to restore hypoglycemia awareness symptoms, give them their independence back, and massively improve their quality of life and reduce the risks associated with that lack of hyposymptom. The transplant program is a national program that supports people in that cohort for whom technology will not stabilize their blood sugar levels. So it's a crucial program that is delivering clinical benefits. Every transplant delivers a clinical benefit.
And one of the people who benefited from such a transplant is Anna Dare. She was just 19 when first diagnosed with type 1. She managed her diabetes relatively well until she developed hypoglycemic unawareness around 20 years later.
Suddenly, I couldn't recognise all my hypos, and my life was starting to get very narrow. So my husband was getting very concerned about me. If he couldn't get hold of me, he was worried that I was having a huge hypo. I did end up in hospital in A&E on one occasion when we had a hypo that I couldn't get myself out of, and nor could my husband. And so we started to have a very different life where we were really worrying about it. And for the first time ever, it was really impacting not just on my life, but on my family's life. And with two young kids, it was a real worry. And I was really fortunate to have Dr. Tay at the time, who was just the most amazing consultant. And he talked to me about an islet transplant. And we went away and we researched it. In fact, my husband, Kieran, was amazing. He really researched into it and looked at, you know, what it was all about. And it was at that point we thought, well, actually, yes, you know, maybe we should take this opportunity to look into it further. And so that's when we decided we would speak to Oxford about it.
Anne first came to our islet transplant clinic in 2011, beginning of 2012. At that time, she was having problems with severe life-threatening hypoglycemia unawareness, which is where she had absolutely no sensation when she got very low blood sugars, dangerously low blood sugars. Now, she had tried every conventional treatment at the time, And one of the things that we can offer with islet transplants is that we can replace those insulin-producing cells that have been damaged, destroyed with type 1 diabetes, and actually not only replace them to produce insulin, but we also know that there can be a big impact on her hyperglycemia. And so at the end of 2012, she underwent her first islet transplant, and then the following year, she underwent a top-up transplant to give her even more islets, and then actually came off insulin as a result of that. So not only did it then control her low blood sugars, she then regained the feelings when she had low sugars, but also she actually, for a period of time, did not need to take insulin at all. We've managed to continue to manage her ever since then, and looked after her with her diabetes and her transplant.
Okay, so I was lucky enough to have two transplants. So the first transplant was in October 2012. And in that time, I had some insulin working in my body. So I was able to reduce the amount of insulin I was taking in via my pen. And that was great. It took a lot of hard work because you've got to look after these islets. You can't just carry on eating all sorts of different things. So I did really work hard to make sure I'd never stress them. You didn't want your glucose levels going above 8, so you had to really work hard to keep it like that so that the islets could settle in your liver and start to be able to work effectively. So I worked really hard at that. So it was quite a hard time, quite an anxious time, because ultimately, although the aim of the islet transplant is to get your hypo awareness back, which it certainly has and continues to do so, as a diabetic, you want to get off insulin. That's all you're bothered about, really, in your heart of hearts. And anybody who says any difference is not telling the truth, because that's what you want. You want to be insulin free. So so that's playing in your mind the whole time. And then I was worried, was I going to get a second one or not? And then when I knew I was going to get a second one, you kind of settled down again. And then I had my second transplant in April. And I remember Professor Johnson coming in to see me in the ward and saying, he was really excited. And he said, "Anne, you've got a brilliant graft. I'm so excited about this graft. It's brilliant." And it was brilliant. And, you know, I'm really grateful to those people who gave up, you know, the donors who gave up their islets to me. I'm very grateful to those families who allowed that to happen. And that then led me to about 3 or 4 months later actually completely getting off insulin and having the best 5 years of my life being insulin free.
The rationale for giving her two transplants is simply that you're then giving her a top-up of cells so that she has a large number of cells in order to actually then become off insulin altogether, or at least have long-term control.
DRWF, staying well until a cure is found.
You're listening to Living with Diabetes, a regular podcast from DRWF. We continue with this special edition looking at the work of the charity in a new film highlighting our heroes. I asked our Chief Executive, Sarah Tutton, why they've created these case studies.
It's essential that we raise awareness to Diabetes Research and Wellness Foundation and the work that we have done over the past 25 years as we approach our 25th anniversary year in 2023. It's hugely important that we demonstrate to our supporters just how far their commitment and their donations have gone, how they have enabled us to deliver impactful programs for people with diabetes across all areas of diabetes through our awareness campaigns, through our educational programs, such as the Diabetes Wellness Event Program and our Family Camp Program, and also through our research funding. Because very often it's hard to understand how a donation today can make a difference in the future. And I think we're wanting to demonstrate not only the amazing work that DRWF has done, but also the life-changing work. Anne has benefited from an islet transplant, and she's sharing her story with our supporters and the wider public about the life-changing difference that that islet transplant has had on her life. You know, not just her life, but her family's life as well. It's been transformational. And it's really important that we can share these messages to ensure that our donors are clear about how we're spending their funds. And also we need to secure the financial support that is going to enable us to take this research forward so that we can ensure that more people like Anne are able to benefit from this type of life-changing program in the future.
So although I feel sad a little bit that I no longer am free for insulin, I'm still very, very grateful that I've had this islet transplant and I have my hyperawareness back. And it's kind of paused my diabetes for a period of time. So I've now feel like the clock's gone back 5 years. Probably even longer than that, really, because the technology's moved forward so much as well. And I've got my hyperawareness, which is what makes me safe. And then I can control my diabetes. And in terms of my life, it's allowed me to go ahead and do what I've always wanted to do. And I've now been a head teacher of a school that I love very dearly for 6 years and will continue to carry on with that career working with children because I know that I can. And without my islet transplant, who knows, I may not have been able to do that.
Anne Adair and her remarkable story, which appears in Our Heroes, a new film from DRWF, looking at the impact the charity has on people living with diabetes. We also feature 8-year-old Eddie Boots, who was diagnosed with type 1 earlier in 2022. His mum, Katie, recalls how it was a scary time for the whole family and that the support from DRWF made a huge difference. She went on to run the London Marathon to raise awareness and funding. You'll also be able to hear my story after I developed type 2 back in 2015. To see the full Our Heroes film, go to our website at drwf.org.uk. I asked our Chief Executive, Sarah Tutton, how much it means that people are still supporting the charity, despite pressures on the cost of living.
People are incredibly generous and, they give to charity because they're connected to a cause or because they're invested in that cause in some way or another. And they want to give a financial gift or they want to volunteer their time or expertise. And all of those things are absolutely amazing. And whilst I think, we would love to think that we can make a difference individually, collectively, we can make more of a difference. We're stronger together. And so it's amazing when our donors, who we rely on, because we rely on voluntary income, we don't get any government funding. So all of our programs are supported by the commitment and generosity of our supporters. Everything that we do, our awareness campaigns, our educational programs, and our research funding is possible because of that ongoing support and commitment from our donors. We couldn't do it without them. And together we are investing in a brighter future for people with all types of diabetes.
And what does the future look like for people living with type 1 and type 2 diabetes?
So diabetes is one of the world's leading health challenges. So whilst the number of people with diabetes have more than doubled in the last 20 years since we've been supporting people with diabetes in the UK, technology has also moved on massively as well. So we've got much improved pumps, insulin delivery pumps. We've got much improved diagnostics tools, CGM. All of these things make a massive difference to the management of diabetes. And whilst they're not a cure, and they are just a supportive element of someone's diabetes self-management and insulin delivery, etc., blood glucose monitoring, they massively improve diabetes quality of life. So that's had a huge impact, I think, in more recent times, alongside things like the National Prevention Programme, which seeks to identify people with type 2 diabetes very early on and supports them in making small lifestyle changes which can reduce the risk of a diagnosis of type 2 diabetes and therefore also reducing the risk of associated complications. So, there are also some fantastic self-management programs out there, such as the programs that DRWF delivers to support people with all types of diabetes, which help people to stay refreshed in their knowledge and access the tools that are going to help them manage their diabetes effectively, reducing those risks of associated complications and effectively staying well until a cure is found.
The figures for people under 40 living with type 2 have increased. What does the charity think to these numbers?
I think type 2 used to be referred to as mature onset diabetes because it was largely diagnosed in people over the age of 40. So, it's hugely worrying that younger people are being diagnosed with this. And it seems that it is largely considered to be related to the rising levels of obesity in this country. And I think obesity, the classification of obesity, appears to increase your risk of type 2 diabetes sevenfold. I think that reduces a little if you're classified as overweight. But the reality is it's hugely worrying that these numbers are escalating as quickly as they are. People under the age of 40 now are being diagnosed much more quickly than people and in higher volumes than people aged over 40. I think it makes our work even more important to ensure that people are aware of the risks of different types of diabetes. Type 2 diabetes can largely be prevented, although it is a progressive condition. Whilst type 2 diabetes is largely considered to be related to lifestyle, of course, there's not one size fits all here. There is about 5 to 6 times higher risk in Black, Afro-Caribbean and Asian communities. And this is largely related to increased genetic risk rather than necessarily lifestyle factors. But that's why it's hugely important for us to be able to reach out and engage with these communities that are at higher risk to access the tools and the information, education necessary to manage diabetes effectively and reduce the risk of associated complications.
And Professor Johnson, Director of DRWF's Human Islet Isolation Facility, endorsed the need for continued support for research into all forms of diabetes.
The impact of DRWF on diabetes research and indeed diabetes management has been phenomenal. Obviously, we've experienced it with the islet transplant story, where we really have managed over the last decade or so to move something from the bench all the way through to the bedside so that patients are actually benefiting from this treatment here in the UK as a result of DRWF-funded projects. Obviously, at the moment, we're in a really difficult climate for research funding, and it's absolutely essential that we are continuing to be funded in order to do the basic science research as well as the translation into the clinics. And so we'd really encourage anyone who can to give regularly to DRWF, give generously to DRWF. We are extremely grateful for the money that we have received from DRWF and the donors who have given that to DRWF. But in order to continue to get an ultimate cure for diabetes, we really do need to be able to maintain this research. And I'm talking on behalf of researchers across the country in both type 1 and type 2 diabetes.
To discover how you can continue to support DRWF, together with the latest news and information, please visit our website at drwf.org.uk. This is Claire Levy from Diabetes Research and Wellness Foundation. Our thanks to everyone who talked to us, and also to you for listening to this latest edition of our regular podcast, Living with Diabetes. We'll leave the last word to Anna Dare.
DRWF have been brilliant with me. I've had the opportunity to talk at length with them about the experiences that I've had and the difference that it's made to my life. But of course, you know, ultimately, my ultimate gratefulness is about what they've done in order to allow me to have this islet transplant, because I know that they work very closely with Professor Johnson, and it's through Professor Johnson that I got this islet transplant. So without their hard work, their fundraising, their charity work, I wouldn't be where I am today.
Living with Diabetes is a Blue Aurora Media production for DRWF. Copyright 2022. Diabetes Research and Wellness Foundation. All rights reserved.